Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello, and thanks for joining me for this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. I want to thank those people who have supported this show, my sponsors. And if you want to become an advertiser or a sponsor of Blue Lives Radio, just contact me, both on Live Talk Radio and the podcast, which has the America Out Loud app and iTunes, and it's a great place to advertise. So we are going to take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
There's a lot that's been happening in law enforcement this week, and some very disturbing things. As you know, I'm a real believer in justice, and justice towards law enforcement. And we're seeing a lot of negativity coming out again. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is one of my favorite topics, and that's the mayor of New York City, de Blasio. Now, we had a little incident that is probably one of the most disturbing situations I have seen in years, and that is the murder of a 15-year-old young man who was innocent of doing anything other than being a police explorer with the New York City Police Department. Now, here's the thing. This young man had a plan. His plan was to become a New York City police officer. Now, there's so many rudderless children out there that have no concept of what they want to be when they grow up. This young man, he truly knew what he wanted to do. His name is Lisandro Guzman Feliz, and he's 15 years old. Some gang members from one of the street gangs there chased him into a bodega. He thought he would be safe in there. Five of these punks, armed with knives and a machete, dragged this poor young man out into the street and savagely butchered him. They stabbed him repeatedly. They hit him with the machete. They chopped him with the machete, and they killed this young man. It is so horrible, so tragic. And this was a police explorer. So this is a guy that should have been, you know, should have been honored by the mayor and the police commissioner. And there should have been a major news story about this all over the country, that gang violence took the life of this young man. And while it was covered fairly well in the New York media, you heard nothing about it in the national media. But here's the deal. This poor boy's mother came out and said that she had never been contacted by the police commissioner or by de Blasio. In fact, the day that it happened, de Blasio was too busy marching in the gay pride parade to even make a comment about this. Now, this comes on the heels of just a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, the majority leader of the City of New York City Council, I forgot her name, she came... The New York Police Department was giving the city council a briefing on gang violence in the city. And they were referring to these gang members as exactly what they are, their titles, gangbangers. Well, this majority leader broke down crying because it was demeaning to call these poor young men and women gangbangers, because of their socioeconomic status. And she referred to them as, I can't make this up. She referred to them as entrepreneurs and was so insulted that the big bad police would call them names like gangbangers. And the savagery that we're talking about here isn't even being addressed. How can these civic leaders, these politicians, look themselves in the eye? This is the worst of the worst. And it's being not only not addressed, it's being ignored by that idiot de Blasio and the other liberal members of New York City Council. You know, my heart just cries out for this young man's mom who is just beside herself. And this is the type of gang violence that's happening in major cities all over the country. Chicago, their shooting statistics came out, and it's obscene. And it's not even being addressed. You don't hear anybody talking about it. So this is one of those, when I talk about the political correctness, this is what's going on. And it's just incredible. Now, while we're talking about that, there was a shooting, an officer-involved shooting in a small community outside of Pittsburgh. It's called East Pittsburgh. And they have a grand total of 8 police officers and a chief. One of their part-time police officers, by the way, they pay these guys about $10 an hour. 10 bucks an hour, right? It's his first... He was just sworn into this police department, although he had experience as a part-time cop in several other communities. A report comes out of a drive-by shooting where a man was shot in the stomach. The vehicle there was a description of the car involved, and the victim, I'm sure this was gang-related, returned fire after he was shot and put a couple bullet holes in the back window of the car. So we got this shot up car. The Bolo goes out to be on the lookout for this vehicle involved with a attempted murder shooting. This happens in one community. A East Pittsburgh police officer who was just sworn in that day, that evening, as a matter of fact, spots the car. Now, like I said, it's a very small community. Their backup is probably miles away in another community. He makes a car stop, and it's occupied 3 times. There's a driver and 2 passengers. He's giving his commands to the driver to get out and get on the ground, and as he's doing that, the 2 passengers jump out of the car and flee. Keep in mind, this is the suspect vehicle in a drive-by shooting. Who generally is the shooter in a drive-by shooting but the passengers? These two young men, go running. The officer opens fire, striking one in the back and killing him. Now, it turns out that this is a 17-year-old young man. His mother, of course, you know, talks about what a good young man he is. He was not armed, but there were 2 guns found in the car, and he had an ammunition magazine in his pocket. Now, it was a white police officer. It was a black suspect. And because of the officer-involved shooting, it has created a firestorm. There's protests. There's calls for violence by certain aspects, which I'll talk about in a minute. But the investigation has to take place. This is a complicated case. And the question is, was this officer legally justified? And that is going to depend on the investigation, what information he had available to him. You know, some people think, well, gee, you know, you can't shoot at a guy who's running. Yes, you can. If you can articulate that this individual is a serious threat to other people. Well, he did. He is a suspect in a drive-by. But can you articulate that well enough that it becomes justifiable? And this is where and why a thorough investigation needs to be completed. It's being completed by the Allegheny County Police Department because they are an independent agency. But the cries of racism and the cries for violence are sparking, you know, major protests. They're closing down the streets by the crowds, and they don't want to accept the fact that you can't make snap judgments about such a complicated issue. Now, you know, this is one of those, when a police officer makes a decision to open fire, they are guided by law, case law, experience, training. It is a very, very difficult subject. Now, would I have fired on this guy as he's running away? I'd have to think about that. Probably not. But that's me. What is the legal recourse for this officer? You know, right now he was a part-timer getting paid about $10 an hour. He's now on leave. His life is law enforcement life is over. There's no doubt about it, no matter what way this investigation goes. What I urge is that people need to wait for an investigation to be done before they make judgments. And in this case, that's going to be vital. So instead, the mayor of Pittsburgh, now, this guy isn't involved in this at all. This is 30 miles away from him. This guy comes out, and here's what he says. I'm speechless at the idiocy of this mayor. He says his name is Peduto. Peduto, yeah, and this is why he even got involved in this. But oh yeah, that's right. Because he was marching with the protesters. Yeah. The Pittsburgh mayor was marching with the protesters, and said, quote, "I think that any time there's an incident when an unarmed person, no matter what the situation was, is leaving the scene of a potential crime, that when the use of force involves any type of deadly activity, there should be a trial to find out what happened and why something went so terribly wrong." I mean, this statement is so idiotic, it's beyond belief. And it shows the liberal mindset of this moron. A trial. So that means that any time a police officer uses force, deadly force, he should go on trial. It's moronic. That is clearly politically motivated. That he's got an agenda, especially if he's marching with the protesters, for God's sake. So you have a guy like this, an idiot like this, a mayor, who is in essence fanning the flames of social injustice. And I got to tell you, watching him pander himself like this just shows, once again, another idiotic mayor. I think I'm going to start an idiotic mayor contest here. I'm going to ask everybody to send me their idiotic mayor stories, because, I mean, they're just coming out of the woodwork. And also, as part of this deal, this extremist who was involved in calling for the deaths of police officers in Dallas that actually sparked a sniper coming in and killing Dallas police officers is now calling for the same thing in Pittsburgh. Now, this guy calls himself a minister. God help us. Minister Morisellum X. And his real name is Morisellum Le Maleri. He's the one that was calling for the deaths of police officers in Dallas and Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Now he's calling for the murders of Pittsburgh police. And Facebook lets him post this stuff. He actually goes out there and he says, "We're on our way to Pittsburgh to apply the laws of an eye for an eye in self-defense of our younger black brother who was murdered. We have no alternative. We must kill the police that are killing our black children and families in self-defense. Now, he writes this and they put it on Facebook. I put a video talking about my book on Facebook, and Facebook took it down, saying that it was political. How my book could be political, which is nothing about personal heroes, is mind-boggling, and they let this guy talk about killing cops. What in God's name is wrong with these people? This guy needs to go to jail for calling, for inciting violence. So if he shows up in Pittsburgh, I hope they take his ass away in handcuffs, because that's exactly where he needs to be. Calling for the deaths of police officers. You know, he's the worst kind of race baiter, and he's unfortunately incited terrible violence in the past, and let's hope that he doesn't do it in the future. We're going to take a walk now into the interview room, and you're going to hear a very interesting guest. Thank you. To those men and women who are still active duty law enforcement, either as a law enforcement officer or in a support position, especially if you're a crime analyst, I don't know if you have heard of Analyst Notebook, but it's an amazing tool that's being used by police agencies all over this country, both large and small. It is an IBM product, but it's being sold and it's being supported by a pretty amazing company called Blue Light LLC. This is a company I had the owner on my show as a an interviewee on the radio, because he is a retired Sergeant Major Green Berets, and they used this product to roll up terrorist networks in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's where this tool was beginning to be used, and then it was modified for law enforcement, and it does amazing stuff. I just got back from a conference in Denver where I interviewed people who have been using it, and I mean to tell you, if you are involved in any investigative process in law enforcement, you need to check this out. Go to BlueLightLLC.com. That's BlueLightLLC.com, and check for Analyst Notebook. It is amazing. The people at Blue Light are amazing, and you will not be sorry if you are in that capacity, because this will assist you in complex investigations, and it will also help your community. Check it out, BlueLightLLC.com. Now, if you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's just, it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, and that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. And it's not, you don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And if it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com, and you can contact them, see their products, and it is worthwhile.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a police officer and an author. He is a current police officer. He has served for 25 years. And he's the author of the book, The Unchained Story. And I'll let him tell you about the book because it's a fascinating story. With me today is Officer Wendell Metzler of the New Holland, Pennsylvania Police Department. Wendell, thanks so much for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you, Randy. It's a great privilege to speak with you this morning.
Well, it is my pleasure. You know, first of all, tell us a little bit about your career. I know that you're in a smaller agency in the state of Pennsylvania.
We're in New Holland, Pennsylvania, Lancaster County. It's about a 13-man department, including a chief, two sergeants, and a detective. Been there. I'm on my 18th year. I'd worked at a neighboring department for 7.5 years. So, most of my career's been here in New Holland, and I have a total of 25 years here coming up next week. So it's been a unique small agency career.
You know, enforcement. There's many people don't know this, but there's 18,000 different police agencies in the United States, and 80% of them have 20 officers or less, and that's a startling number. But rural policing and small town policing has its own set of stresses and dangers. And, you know, when you talk about a smaller community, what's the population of your city?
We serve a borough and a neighboring township, and our population's I think it's right around maybe 10 or 12,000. And we handle about 5,000 service calls a year. And you're absolutely right. It's a unique, you know, you're really attached to the community because it's smaller. And, you know, to be quite honest, you don't want to fall into it, but you do get complacent a lot of times. You don't have the resources sometimes that larger agencies do. And you're kind of the do-it-all guy. If you get the call, a lot of times it's you handle it start to finish. So it does have some unique challenges.
Yeah, it does. And, you know, complacency is something that it's a very, very dangerous thing for law enforcement, but it's very, very understandable. I had an occasion when I was a small town police officer in Princeton where, you know, major crime didn't happen very often. So I walked into an alarm call at a jewelry store. This woman was setting off her alarm all the time, and it was in the downtown area, middle of the day. And so the alarm comes into the station. I go and I just saunter on in. And next thing I know, there's a gun at the back of my head because it was actually a robbery this time. And I just blundered into it like an idiot. And it almost cost me my life. So that's one of the dangers of small town policing.
Yep. And you know, when you first start in a community like that, you just don't believe that there's evil in your community. You know, in my circumstance, I grew up in this county and community and just didn't realize behind the scenes all the things that go on and all the evil that's out there, you know, you're just kind of naive to it. You know, sometimes you read it in the newspaper, sometimes you don't. So yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's very challenging.
So you wrote a book, and I know the challenges of writing a book. And it's quite an experience. So your book is called The Unchained Story. And I found it fascinating because, why don't you tell the folks about it and why you wrote it? The story is truly compelling.
Yep, it's the most unique, bizarre story that you'll ever read. It's all true. When I came to New Holland in 2001, I think it was May, instantly, you know, our town has those known troublemakers or, you know, in a small town, one of the first things we do when people get out of jail is search them because the crime usually starts when they get out. So a lot of times we deal with the same people over and over again.
Right, right.
So, yeah, in 2001, there was this known criminal in our town, Ryan Forbes. He engaged me in our first meeting was in May of 2001 in a foot pursuit at a underage drinking party that was reported to involve a gun. We were running through the backyards of New Holland. He got cornered up in a gated backyard, and we physically fought, punches, kicks, everything. I had him in a headlock, and turned out to be pepper spray on both of us. That was pre-taser error. So we spent half a night together in the emergency room at our local hospital getting both our eyes flushed out. So that was my first encounter with Ryan Forbes. And then it just spiraled out of control from there over a period of up to 2007. We engaged in a vehicle DUI vehicle pursuit where he rammed my police car. There again, he during that pursuit, a couple of my coworkers were trying to lay out spike strips, tire deflation devices. He veered in those direction of those two officers, could have killed both of them, could have killed me when he rammed the police car. And there again, it ended in a foot pursuit, a physical fight, and once again, he was off to jail. Over that period of time, he spent... I think it was up to a total of 3 years in the county and also state jail, and is a convicted felon. And, you know, that was personal in a small town, so it's very easy to develop a hatred for him. You know, he put my life in jeopardy, my coworkers, and from his perspective of the criminal, which he does a great job in the book outlining it, his perspective was that Wendell Metzler, Officer Metzler, was out to get me. You know, I would just wanted to smoke pot. I just wanted to drive drunk. I wasn't hurting anybody. And this cop's harassing my fun. And that was literally his take on law enforcement. He hated law enforcement. He hated me. And to be quite honest, there was a strong hatred I had for him also.
You know, I want to stop you there for one minute. You know, when you're talking about... basically, a repeat offender, if you will, in a smaller community. You're talking about. I find it very interesting because there is this feeling that you get, and it's very human. It's not something that you control. But after repeated negative contacts with this guy, I mean, literally, the guy's trying to ram your car and hurt you, it would be pretty, I mean, you'd have to have the patience of Job not to feel personal hatred and personal feelings about an individual that is in your community and you are constantly having these type of violent confrontations with.
Yes. I mean, to be quite honest, it was like a mini vacation for our police department when he went off to jail. It was a celebration because we knew that we were going to get a break from some crime there in New Holland, you know. And, you know, in a smaller community, too, you're attached to the victims that he impacted, too. he was involved with some thefts and stuff like that there. So you're attached to not only the victims and you feel the compassion for them, which, you don't want to admit it, but it kind of drives the hatred even more because you see the victims are impacted by him, not just only yourself, you know.
So over the years, what was the period of years that you had encounters with him?
It was basically from May of 2001 until probably like September of 2007. Just many encounters, anything from DUIs, drug arrests, warrant pickups.
How many times do you think you arrested him?
I think it was about seven. Yeah, seven. And then there were some other agencies that had also arrested him also, so... Yeah, it was probably seven times. And mine were felony stuff where he assaulted me, I think it was twice. So it was, mine were the more serious felony charges that put him in for a while.
So you have this guy that you've had numerous encounters with, physical fights over a protracted period of time, and then he goes to prison for a while?
Yes. He was in and out of county and state jail for up to 3 years. So he would go in for 6 months. He'd be out again at the county level. I think when I put him in at the state level, he did two stays in there that were over a year. And, his hatred for law enforcement, enhanced in the prison system too, because you're around people that hate law enforcement in there for the most part also. So, it wasn't until his last stay in jail, which would have been, maybe around the winter months of 2007, where he kind of had, he found God in there, and he kind of made amends with things and kind of decided to change his life around.
And how did this relationship then change?
Well, and that's a bizarre, unique story, too. So he gets out of jail, and, in a small town, people know what car I drive to work, and we also know the dirt on the bad guys, too. But when he gets out of jail, our agency had started hearing rumors, that he was turning his life around, he found God. And, there again, in law enforcement, and myself included, we probably have not such a positive viewpoint on rehabilitation or people actually turning it around because right. The numbers are low. The success stories are very low that happened. So in my mindset was, all right, here we go again. He found God in jail. That's where everybody finds God. And, it won't be long till we arrest him again. And, we have a local fair in town where they shut down the main street. Usually it's the first week in October. And that's like the worst week for us to work because a lot of it's mandatory overtime. It's long hours. Your parade night, you're dealing with 10,000 people. It really stresses the agency, the call volumes high that week. So it's a bad week to be a cop in New Holland. And that's when Ryan picks the week to approach me and make amends. Actually came up to me while I was on bike patrol there and apologized for his actions at, what he had done to me and also done to the community. And he was compassionate about it. If you're a religious person, which I am, I believe it was divine. I think, God helped me with the healing process there. And I did something that you're not supposed to do. I gave him my business card with my personal cell phone number on it. And I said, hey, if we ever have the opportunity to share your story, to help others, maybe help some other kids, troubled kids that they don't go down the path that you do, I'd like to do that with you. And I gave the card, and, I didn't know if I would, I'm downplaying rehab. I'm thinking, he's never going to call. And sure enough, 4 months later, I was invited to a banquet where he had participated in like a transition program to help him stay the course and get back into the community and try to help him find a good job and stuff. And I took him up on the banquet. I mean, a cop, free food, you're not going to turn that down, right?
Were there donuts?
Yeah, bagels, you know, the whole nine yards, roast beef. You know, Lancaster County's rich with, you know, the farm food here, so you're not going to turn that down. But so I go to this banquet, and I'm thinking, you know, free meal, nothing. Well, he forgot to mention I was the guest speaker there that night, and I learned that when I got there and got to share a story, and what a story it's been. You know, from there on, we did about a two-year period where we had done a lot of public speaking with local churches, sharing our very unique and bizarre story. And then we kind of got busy. Everywhere we went, everybody said, you know, you should write a book. You should write a book.
Let's go back before you get to the book. So when he first approached you at the fair, and he told you that he wanted to make amends with you, you were open to changing the relationship. I find that kind of interesting because of your past history.
Yeah, and that's why I tell people I believe that you know, I believe that God played a part in that, because he couldn't have picked a worse week to do it. He couldn't have picked the worst person to come up to me and do that, and then to kind of open my heart to it with the personal, you know, hatred. You know, and I had to be careful too, because, you know, it was violating department policy.
That's where I was going to go next. I'm glad you brought that up. Almost all departments have a policy about consorting with a person of ill repute, or whatever your agency calls it.
Yep. Association with a convicted felon. So we kind of had to be very discreet about our relationship in the beginning. You know, and the coworkers too. I mean, I had to hear the jokes and stuff at the station, like, oh, you know, here comes Jesus again. You know, he found God, now he's good, you know. And I understood that, you know, because of the personalization with it. But I think when our relationship finally grew, time heals. I'm a firm believer in that, time heals. And I want to say it was probably a year and a half into that moment where, you know, he asked for forgiveness, where, you know, the coworkers start coming around, seeing some of the good things he had done. He had actually joined a local cross connection program that was designed to help troubled kids in town, like a recreational program after school, and was running that. And, you know, time heals, and at that point, because we had done some public speaking, I felt, you know, that the department would have a hard time disciplining me because of the backlash that would come from the community that, you know, was supporting what we were doing. And then I became affiliated, sat on a board with the transition to community program that he came out of, helping prisoners transition back into the community. So I kind of felt I had the support there that, you know, my department wouldn't come after me, and, you know, I gambled right on that one there, that everything worked out.
Did you have conversation? Did your chief ever confront you about it?
No. Actually, he was kind of supportive. They had done some local newspaper articles that, you know, I was affiliated with that transition to community program, and we got to share our story. So I never, he even allowed a photograph of me in uniform to do that newspaper article. So there again, I think time had healed, and, you know, it presented the police department in a very positive light. And, you know, they were they were definitely for that. So,
well, I'm glad to hear that, because, you know, sometimes law enforcement leadership sees things only very, very black and white. And I'm happy to see that your chief saw the possibilities here, and recognized that there were some positive outcomes that could play a role here, and allowed this to take place, because it could have been very difficult. Could have made it very difficult for you.
Yeah, and if I could give a shout out to my current chief, Bill Lighty. He, you know, when we threw the book idea out there that we were, you know, going to start the project, he was very supportive of it. He allowed us to take a picture of our police car and me in uniform and Ryan in like a prisoner jumpsuit in our town and stuff. So he was very supportive of that, and you know, I thank him for his support on that also. Cause,
yeah, it's important. Good, good.
Yep.
So tell us about the book now.
Okay. So, you know, everywhere we went, everybody said, you know, you guys should write a book. And in the book, Ryan outlines a lot of trouble that he had with his family in the past and stuff like that there. And his dad would come out to some of the public speakings that we did, and his dad would always say at the end, you guys should write a book. You guys should write a book. And we, you know, we're local boys. We don't really have connections with publishers. The cost of writing a book is just astronomical, too. We just didn't have the funding available. And in 2015, I responded to a medical emergency call. Didn't recognize the address at first. And it was a couple days before Christmas, and it was Ryan's dad. And I was one of the last people to speak with him. He went into cardiac arrest while I was there. And it was just a somber moment. You know, I was there for Ryan. But in that tragedy, there was a life insurance policy that opened up an opportunity for us to write a book. And through purchasing another book, we were able to establish a local author here. And I read a couple of his books, and I was just I don't read much, and I was like, man, this guy has to write our book. The way he does it is just perfect. And so we invited him over to our house and undertook about a $16,000 adventure together, and we got the book out in November. And you know, it's just we've received a lot of positive feedback, you know, from you know, people that are struggling with drugs, and, you know, even some law enforcement officers I got some outstanding emails from. And, you know, the intent behind writing the book was, you know, from Ryan. Ryan is very pro-law enforcement now, very vocal about that. He loves the police. He actually brought his whole family over for me to give him a tour of the police station because he wants to portray the police in a positive light in his life and his family's life. So he's very pro-law enforcement, and in the book, he likes to convey, you know, hey, I had a hatred for these guys. It wasn't until I met Wendell and understood what their role in society is and the hardships of their job did I truly come to appreciate, you know, authority in general, but, you know, what they the sacrifices they make for our community. And it's neat how he outlines that in the book. And then my perspective on the book was simply this. You know, in law enforcement, we hate to admit that we're wrong with anything. And, you know, like I said, we all get complacent. You know, we all deal with the same people most of the time. And you just get in that mindset that once an evil seed, always an evil seed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just wanted to convey to law enforcement that, hey, you know, here's a bizarre story. You know, keep your mind open, you know, because that evil one that you arrest and put in jail and you learn to hate might turn around to be your best friend someday. I mean, I served in Ryan's wedding as his best man a couple years ago, and we have family picnics together. He's very active and very involved with my family's life, which is even bizarre too, that my family loves him like blood family. I mean, it's just bizarre.
You know, that's you're absolutely right. I mean, we do get caught up in our own personal views, and it's difficult to change those views once you have someone visualized in your mind that they are a certain way. And well, you know, I know you mentioned faith a couple times. Do you think that it's because of your faith that that you were open to the possibilities here?
Yes, I firmly believe that. I'm, you know, my mentality, you know, I turned 50 this year. I'm not a very forgiving person. I mean, if somebody wrongs me, whether it be a toxic leader or a coworker or something like that. I mean, I'm very quick to write that person off. Even if there is a half-hearted apology, I'm like, okay, well, I accept your apology, now get away from me. So I'm not, I mean, when you read this book, you're thinking, I forgive everybody that harms Officer Metzler, and unfortunately, I haven't mastered the skill of forgiveness yet, but in this instance, I did, and that's why I do think, God played a role in that, definitely. I mean, I can't explain it any other way.
What is in the future now? Are you going to continue to do speaking engagements about this and touch more lives?
Yes, I mean that's our ultimate goal. Right now, we're averaging about 2, maybe 3 speaking engagements locally here at church. Anything from a church to we did an ambulance banquet. So we kind of youth groups. We kind of go wherever. We'd like to continue that momentum, and the biggest thing too that I'm trying to do is kind of push this book outside of Lancaster County.
Sure, absolutely.
That it might be able to help, maybe some people in law enforcement look at things a little differently, and definitely give hope to the criminal that, hey, if Ryan, all the things that he did could change, and it was a lot of work. He still fights his battles to this day. His criminal background follows him with everything he does, getting a driver's license back. It's an uphill battle with everything that he does because of his past. But I think it does give hope to the criminal element that you can change. There comes a time to get rid of the excuses and put your man pants on, and you can change. I mean, there is hope, you can. And we would love to just see this book take off nationwide. If we pick up a publishing company or something like that, we'd like to really see it grow, because I can't tell you how many emails that we got from people that read our book and said, I couldn't put it down and it really touched me. It's a unique story. You guys should make a movie out of it. You never know. We had a banquet we were at where Kurt Cameron was there. And we gave him a copy of the book, and we'd love to see it take off in Hollywood. We never did this for personal gain. I want to make that clear. I mean, to take on the dollar investment that we did, it was never about money or personal gain. It's just trying to help people to see that they, they don't go down the same path as Ryan.
Sure, absolutely. No, I mean, writing a book is a long struggle to do. I feel your pain there, and getting the word out about it is very difficult, especially when you're a small author. You're fighting an uphill battle just to get people knowledgeable about the book. So I mean, I'm hopeful that the listeners of Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement, will explore picking up this book. Where can they purchase it?
You can purchase our book on Amazon. You can title search it Unchained, and then maybe hit one of the authors, myself or Ryan Forbes, and it should pop up for you. You can also check out our website. We just got a website. Had a local high school student do it for us, Tristan Young, here about 2 weeks ago. It's called theunchainedministries.com. If you look on there, there's a host of stores in our county that sell the books, and also I think it has an Amazon link that you can click right on there and order our book. It's a very short book, a little over 150 pages or something like that, and 2-hour read. And the funny thing is, I had a coworker buy one from me one morning, and he started reading it the last 20 minutes of our shift, and he came in laughing the next night. He said, you know what I did when I went home? And I said, well, you just got done working a 12-hour midnight shift. I hope you went to bed when you went home. He's like, no, I was so intrigued by your book, I had to stay up and finish it, and then I went to bed. So a lot of people we talk to, they start the book and they just can't put it down. And then we've just gotten a lot of positive feedback with it.
Well, that's awesome. So, once again, the book is called The Unchained Story, and it's by Officer Wendell Metzler, and also Ryan Forbes. So for my listeners, check out the Unchained story. And I want to, you know, thank you for taking the time to come on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and share with us your story of faith and forgiveness.
Definitely. I appreciate the opportunity to do that, Randy. I think it's a big help, and I think it can help law enforcement and the criminal mind. I thank you for that opportunity.
My pleasure. Thanks again.
Yep, thank you.
I want to share a little something personal with you, and also something that I have a great deal of pride in. And what I'm talking about is my new book, The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People, is now ready for pre-order from Amazon.com. I got to tell you a little bit something about that book, why I did it. Many of you who follow me know that my past history, but there are some things you might not know. And the reason I retired from policing with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is because I suffered a stroke in my police car. And the subsequent medical diagnosis was, let's say, grim. And at that time, I started thinking about my legacy and what would I be remembered for. And I happened to be watching an interview with an incredible man named Frank Shankwitz, the man who created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, when he was an Arizona trooper. And I saw this interview and said, I've got it. I want to meet him and talk to people like him about who their personal heroes were that inspired them to do the amazing works that they do for others. So I traveled the country and I talked to incredible people like Frank, like Gary Sinise, like people right in your backyard who you might not even know but who have touched the lives of so many people. That book changed my life. I think if you read it, it might change yours as well. It is a realization that heroes are among us and everyone can become a personal hero. So if you would, check it out on Amazon.com, look up The Power of Legacy or just look up my name, and I would love for you to read it and I would love for you to review it. So check it out, Amazon.com, The Power of Legacy, and I think you'll really enjoy it. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you work extra jobs like many of us have to do, you're going to want to know about this company. It is an amazing company, and they're called Law Enforcement Specialists. Now, they're based out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the United States, and it's pretty unique. You know, we all have to face facts. That is, the police salaries basically suck. And you have to work extra jobs in order to either make ends meet or you want a few of the nicer things in life. Well, you know, sometimes you have to get them through your agency. But if you want to check with law enforcement specialists, there's a real good possibility that they can put you into extra duty assignments. And they work with your agency. It's wild. I've really never seen another company that does this. So check out their website. It's offdutypoliceofficers.com. Check that out again, offdutypoliceofficers.com. And you sign up with them, and they get you extra jobs. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Check them out. I know these people personally. They are great folks. They help law enforcement officers all over this country. They assist in charitable organizations, and they're just good people. Check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com. Policeofficers.com.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have given their lives in the line of duty. This week, I have two names to read. The first is Senior Police Officer Christopher Driver of the Rocky Mount Police Department in North Carolina. Christopher Driver, Senior Police Officer, was killed in a vehicle crash in front of 4112 South Church Street while on duty at approximately 10:30 p.m. His patrol car collided with the back of a commercial truck that was left parked in his travel lane. The truck was being towed illegally when its brakes failed and the driver had to stop. While the driver went in search of help, Officer Driver, who was responding to the scene, hit the vehicle. The driver was arrested and charged with illegal tow of a vehicle, leaving an unattended vehicle, and death by vehicle. A passenger was charged with illegal tow of vehicle and leaving the scene of an accident. Officer Driver had served with the Rocky Mount Police Department for 5 years. He is survived by his wife. Senior Police Officer Christopher Driver, Rocky Mount Police Department, North Carolina. End of watch, Saturday, June 23rd, 2018. The second officer to lose his life in the line of duty this week was Police Officer Matthew Mazzani of the Mentor Police Department in Ohio. Police Officer Matthew Mazzani was struck and killed by a hit-and-run driver while assisting another officer during a traffic stop on Route 2 near Route 306 at approximately 1 a.m. The vehicle that had been stopped contained a subject wanted in another jurisdiction. As the officers began to approach the car to take the person into custody, another vehicle entered the area and struck Officer Mazzani. The vehicle fled the scene after striking the officer, but was located several hours later and the driver taken into custody. Officer Mazzani has served with the Mentor Police Department for 14 years. He is survived by his son, father, and brother. Police Officer Matthew Mazzani, Mentor Police Department, Ohio. End of watch, Sunday, June 24th, 2018. These two men gave their lives in the line of duty in service of their communities. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for listening in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on AmericaOutloud.com. Couple things. One is, if you are on Facebook, you have got to follow me. Come to Facebook and look up Randy Sutton Public Figure. Randy Sutton Public Figure, and like it and follow it, and you'll be able to see everything that I write and communicate with me over there. And if you're on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at LT Randy Sutton. And I'm also on Instagram and LinkedIn. I don't know. I don't even know how to use Instagram, but you can find me on LinkedIn as well. I also want to thank my my advertisers. They really, they make this show possible. So if you are in looking for some of their products and what they do, please take a look at them. The first is Blue Light LLC. Blue Light is a software company that does just an incredible investigative software. So if you are a law enforcement leader or a detective, check them out. That's Blue Light LLC. And also, law enforcement specialists. Law enforcement specialists, they provide extra work assignments for law enforcement officers in most of the United States. So check them out. Stinky Vest, law enforcement officers, you all know how nasty those vests get. They got a great product. It's a spray, and that is stinkyvest.com. I appreciate you once again for listening in to Blue Lives Radio. I'll see you again next week.